It's showtime.
Cade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We have reached midweek here on the 22nd day of May 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And over in the chat room, folks are just anxiously awaiting your arrival. Everybody else is there. Now we just need you. Now, the fact of the matter is, if you pick out a screen name and a password, Gregory will greet you, so will Anatole, so will Jimmy, so will Squeaky, and the those are the early arrivers. More will be by later. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, preaching loud and clear on both platforms. Much obliged, Brother Deacon. Brother Deacon does a lot to keep the packets passing. He does. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This program begins every evening with gratitude, and so for this, the 22nd day of the month, we have thanks to send out to our 22nd day of the month subscribers, namely Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of California, last I checked, Bill in Florida, Tirani, Michael, and Jamie. Thank you all of you. Thank you all five of you for being partial sponsors of the program on a monthly basis. It means more than you may actually know. Well, thank you. Gregory in the chat room says, I really enjoy this show, Bob. Well, thank you, Gregory. We enjoy having you popping by the chat room. Much appreciated. Well, it is prayer meeting Wednesday. No doubt about it. But I'm afraid we're going to have to preempt some of the shenanigans that usually attend the beginning of the program. By the way, the fundraising goal for this evening, Peg in the sandbox stood us to have a show on me for Monday. Last night, Jude jumped in and knocked out some of yesterday's fundraising goal. So that leaves us at $375 this evening. And I hate it when it's like that, because that's like 10 people at $37.50, or what's even more confusing, 37.5 people at $10. But we need to raise $375, and if someone would get us started, maybe others will follow suit, and we won't be looking at $575 tomorrow, or maybe $775 come, you know, Friday. I really hope we're not looking at that. We're probably going to have to... I got prayer meeting Wednesday stories, and a couple of them are ecumenical in nature, and it's some of the funniest stuff you've ever heard on a prayer meeting. Then there's some not so funny stuff, but hopefully, you know, maybe we get to it. But I wanted to begin the program simply by pointing out that Julius Geezer is on what you might call a losing streak. And whether it's baseball, hockey, football, basketball, losing streaks will make you a little nuts. Because you're doing everything the same way, it's just that the ball bounces in a different direction, or it rolls through your legs even though it's going slower than it. Well, if it was going fast, you'd probably have it. Losing streaks, among golfers, there's a word that you don't say. I don't know if our buddy Ron in the far, hopefully draining north is listening right now, but he knows what that word is. And it's like with Shakespeare. You never call the Scottish play by its name, because if you're involved in a production of the Scottish play and you call it by its name, horrible things are going to happen. And this comes from somebody who's not even superstitious. But these things, but Donald Trump is on a losing streak. I think, and I tried to get it going, my little itty-bitty Twitter account, it's not going to get anything going. But I came up with a little hashtag a little bit ago. And the hashtag is Trump Slump. Yes, he's 0 for 2 in federal court this week, and it's only getting worst. Wait a minute, we got an early cowbell. That's going out to Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, please tell me it isn't true. Oh, I read this. It's a short little, it's just a little bitty one-liner of an email. And yeah. Subject line, please tell me it isn't true. Did I just see DT, the man with the worst comb-over ever, say from the podium, I don't do cover-ups? Well, yes, you did. And only because the goddess of irony was so damn busy making sure that a federal judge in New York stuck it in him and broke it off, did she not, drop a bucket of bird shit on his head or something, just as a reminder that she's paying attention. She's paying attention. Yes, the man with the worst comb-over in the history of hair declared that he does not do cover-ups. Matt is closely attuned to the irony that drives the universe from its very universal central core this evening. That's beautiful. That's beautiful, Matt. But yeah, he's 0 for 2. We talked at some length on Monday about the ruling in D.C. from Judge Amit Mehta in regard to Trump versus House Committee on Oversight and Reform, wherein he was thoroughly spanked. And today, on his supposed home turf up there in New York City, another judge with another one of those names, in this case, Judge Ramos, Ali did the same thing to him in Trump versus Deutsche Bank and Citibank. Citibank, Citibank, Deutsche Bank, Citibank. Same vowel, different pronunciations. Well, I mean, only certain parts of the world. Deutsche Bank. Hell, I don't. Here in West Virginia, I doubt if we'd even get all the way through Deutsche. Dutch Bank. Dutchy Bank. Anyway, in the case of Trump versus Deutsche Bank and Citibank, in which his loan and financial documents were subpoenaed, he tried to intervene against the subpoena. You know, they didn't subpoena anything. Let's be clear. In both of those cases, nothing was subpoenaed from Donald Trump or any of his skeevy enterprises or any of his nasty gits. The subpoenas were directed to third parties who really don't have much in the way of choice except for the fact that they're scared shitless of him for reasons that, and maybe it's not him they're scared of. Maybe it's somebody that's really worth being scared of. Maybe it's somebody who has a penchant for borscht and Ocetra caviar. Who knows? Maybe that's who they're afraid of, but Anyway, they're third parties. Trump intervened. He was not part of any legal process. Again, he is trying to cover up something by trying to keep his business and financial records out of the public eye. What's it going to be? We're going to find out how many hookers he had get abortions? Who knows? Find out, as many have suggested, how broke he is? In the case of Deutsche Bank, there's reason to think that we might find out that there really was some dirty business with some Russians all along. And that would be enough to make him muss his comb over. Darlene in Connecticut with a note, reported by The Hill, believe it or not. Laugh of the day. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff jabbed at Attorney General William Barr on Wednesday, saying he has, quote, all the duplicity of Trump lawyer Giuliani, quote, without all the good looks and general likability. Oh, shit, this has devolved into something serious, hasn't it? As Darlene notes, ooh, nice smackdown, Adam, LOL. But anyway, the Trump slump, he was 0 for 1, but today it went to 0 for 2. They went into Judge Ramos's court, and once again, that noted pettifogger, last name Consovoy, I keep thinking consomme, I like a little yeah, that's the trick, by the way. The trick to a really, really good Bloody Mary on, say, a Sunday morning when you're feeling a little rough. Zing Zang Bloody Mary mix. Horseradish, of course. The Zing Zang already has it in it. You can boost it if you want to. A little cayenne pepper. Maybe a little hot pepper, you know, sauce. The vodka or the tequila. As you wish. But then, yes, a little consomme. It just makes everything else perk right up. But anyway, lawyer Consovoy was arguing irreparable harm to Trump's something or another. Maybe it wasn't Consovoy. But they made the same argument in the Southern District of New York today. Or previously, that they had made in D.C. And both Judge Ramos and Judge Mehta gave the same answer. Fuck off. Mm-hmm. Because the fact of the matter is, Congress has a right to investigate pretty much as it pleases. As long as it's within the purview of the jurisdiction, more properly, of the committee. And it appears that Judge Ramos has read Judge Mehta's opinion. He took the time to read his opinion from the bench. I haven't been able to find a published copy of it just yet. And he did the same thing Judge Mehta did. That is, he refused to give a preliminary injunction on the subpoenas pending action by the circuit court. That means the clock, and we're now at 5 days and counting down for the Mazars subpoenas, and we are, I guess, as of today, at 7 days and counting on the subpoenas to Deutsche Bank and Citibank. And for their purposes, Mazars and Citibank and Deutsche Bank, I'm sure that in the background, the pettifoggers on behalf of Trump are screaming, God damn it, we'll sue you, we'll sue you, oh, we'll sue you out of business. You know what? You can't be sued for complying with a subpoena. They've got a defense. If you legally have the records and the records are legally subpoenaed, sorry. And so it's a really bad kind of 0 for 2 for the nitwit Nero. Now, just as we were talking about the appeal, we'll go to in the case of Mazars, it'll go to, you know, Trump versus House Oversight Committee. That'll go to the D.C. Circuit, and apparently, the present motion panel, which is the panel of judges that will hear the appeal of Judge Mehta's refusal to preliminarily enjoin the subpoena pending litigation, will be heard by three judges, David Tittell, Patricia Millett, and Naomi Rao. This is not good. As far as the Trump slump is concerned. Judge Millett, Patricia Millett, was appointed by Barack Obama. David Tittell was appointed by Bill Clinton. And that's not to say that they're some sort of rabid partisan hacks. It's just to say that they come from an era when we at least nominally cared about the qualifications of U.S. Circuit Court judges or federal judges generally. In order to have the subpoena enjoined, two out of three are going to have to agree to enjoin the subpoena. The black letter law involved with this case is so clear that it seems almost impossible that Judge Tittell or Circuit Judge Millett would agree with it. Although, and of course, at the same time, Naomi Rao is legitimately, no kidding, a judicial freak. And can be counted on to hear her master's voice and do his bidding. But she's just one vote out of three. Either Tittell or Millett will have to join her in order to keep these subpoenas from being returnable in the next 5 days or so. Who is Naomi Rao? For a brief period of time, she was actually in the Trump regime. She was the regulations czar whose job was to destroy all those job-killing regulations. You know, those people-saving regulations. Among other things, at one point in time, she said she wasn't real sure about a Supreme Court decision that protected marriage equality because it didn't go far enough in bowing and scraping to the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, evangelical, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, fundamentalist freaks who hate for gay people to have equal rights under the Constitution, which she termed recognition exclusively for traditional marriage. She got so far down into the weeds, since we were talking about weeds yesterday with Ben Stoney Carson, she once got all wrought about dwarf tossing. She was mad at a court in France because it had upheld a ban on dwarf tossing, and she, on the basis of free market principles of capitalism, declared that the French government had no right intervening to keep drunk people from tossing dwarfs who volunteered or took pay to be, you know, they were engaging. Well, they'd taken away those dwarfs' livelihoods. Oh, really? Not real old Naomi Rao. And back when she was a college student and trying to get the attention of the wingnut welfare bureaus that this kind of talk gets you, She opined against date rape. She's one of those people that thinks there's no real campus rape problem. It's sort of like Brett Stevens over at the New York Times. She said that the phenomenon of calling out and dealing with date rape
exemplifies the attempts of the nurture feminists to develop an artificial alternative world in which women are free from sexual danger, and no always means no.
Naomi wants to live in a world where no means yes, or no means I really want to be raped, or no means... Yeah. That's the kind of freak Naomi Rao is, but she is balanced against two people with no reason to have to recuse themselves who do not have that kind of sick background. And here's one more thing to consider before we move over to the other decision. When we were talking about this on Monday, and when we talked about it again yesterday, I think we all just naturally assumed that the case would be heard by the Supreme Court. That's not a foregone conclusion. If this case is reviewed by the D.C. Circuit and they find no fault with the rationale of Judge Mehta, then they'll ask for an en banc hearing for every member of the D.C. Circuit to hear the case. They'll probably not get that, and they will appeal to the Supreme Court of the United States. But it's not a case of original jurisdiction in the Supreme Court. Original jurisdiction means that the Supreme Court can hear it before anybody else. It's obviously making its way through the system. And five votes could decide that the thing was reasonably heard and not to even weigh into it. Those five votes would presumably be the four so-called liberals. Remember, there's no such thing actually as a liberal judge. We're talking about the law, after all. Plus Roberts. Those five say, nope, not going to grant cert on this, then it's over. And then if, say, in this case, Mazars doesn't turn over the subpoenas, then all hell breaks loose. They will not turn over the subpoenas, but they will turn over the documents sought by the subpoenas. That's that case. The other case, Deutsche Bank and Citibank, which just got slam dunked by Judge Ramos. Well, that goes up to the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is headquartered in Manhattan. And I thought it might be good to take a look at who's running that show. The chief judge of the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is Robert Katzman. And he was, he's 66 years old and was appointed by Bill Clinton. The full-time status judges, well, there's a Poppy Bush appointee, two more Clinton appointees, two appointees by W. So that's 3-3 so far. Four appointees by Obama. So that's 7-3. And then there's three weirdos appointed by Donald Trump. So it's 7-6. Then there are the senior status judges who are still active, but they're not there all the time. You got people born 1932, 35, 37. But they are senior status up to the present, and they include two Carter appointees, one Poppy Bush appointee, four Clinton appointees, three W appointees, and one Obama appointee. And they, too, will have a motion panel. So that will be the three who hear any appeal of Judge Ramos's order. Trying to find out during the month of May. No, that's the Ninth Circuit, damn it. Let me just check here. Too much digging around. But at any rate, the two opinions are significantly similar. Yeah, right. That's what I said. Scott writing in, the two other judges on the motion panel are Tittell and Millett. Millett appointed by Obama and Tittell appointed by Clinton. Yeah. So it's two normal people and one twisted fucking freak. But that's not just 0 for 2. That's 0 for 2 and 2 blowouts. That's two games that he's lost, you know, bigly, blanked, shut out. And so, that probably accounts for the hissy that he threw today. Because, well, we all know he threw a hissy today. He was supposed to have an infrastructure meeting because, lo and behold, Infrastructure Week has come around at the White House. And so this morning he was supposed to sit down with Schumer and Speaker Pelosi, and they were supposed to talk about the crumbling infrastructure of the United States of America. Only the very stable genius had set a trap. Yes. He already had signs printed up saying, no collusion, no obstruction, and touting something about money. You know, those things don't just happen overnight. There's a print shop, it has to be sent to them, and they do the work. When Pelosi and Schumer walked in to meet with him, the drapes in the room were drawn. He stood up and engaged in some pout rage. And the minute that Nancy Pelosi began to speak, he walked out of the room and went out into the Rose Garden and went about the business of losing his mind some more, or, I don't know, getting one step closer to that stroke that we keep thinking he's probably going to have. Oh, he, as insane people go, he was definitely in rare form. This business, he's turned into a bit from a Seinfeld episode. You remember when George was referring to himself in the third person? Well. The Spirakeets have just about completed their separation of Trump's consciousness from himself. So, in his rant today, he said, "They hated President Trump. They hated him with a passion." Talking about the team that Robert Mueller had brought together to perform the investigation that he was ordered to perform, in which he performed to the least of his abilities. And what the chlamydia Claudius used as his jumping off point, jump off something by all means. Was a meeting that he did not attend. House leadership got together this morning as well and had a little tete-a-tete about impeachment. Continuing to prove her understanding of the process, Nancy Pelosi and several of the committee chairs said, no, it's not time for impeachment yet. And a couple of members of the House Democratic Caucus said, "Oh yes, it is," but they parted amiably. And they parted on an understanding that, no, it's not time to impeach yet, because things like Trump versus Oversight Committee and Trump versus Deutsche Bank and Citibank are about to blow up in his face. He's pulled the pin, and he's just sitting there. "It's the damnedest-looking pineapple I've ever seen." Yeah. And so, in the Rose Garden, he said, "All of a sudden, I hear last night that they're going to have another meeting about the I-word. The I-word. Can you imagine? I don't speak to Russians about campaigns. It's a hoax. The greatest hoax in history." This is like one of those cheap television mysteries where, say, somebody's been whacked over the head with a monkey wrench and nobody knows that but the cops, and the guy comes in and says, "I definitely didn't hit him with that monkey wrench. I don't speak to Russians about campaigns. It's a hoax." I know. It's no laughing matter. But Jesus, you have to sometimes, or you're just going to go crazy screaming. And I don't want to scream for 3 hours. The man's not home. What really chapped his ass is when Nancy Pelosi said that it appeared he had been engaging in a cover-up. "Instead of walking happily into a meeting, I walked into a meeting with people who said I'd done a cover-up. I don't do cover-ups." See Matt's email from earlier in the program. And then, of course, there was that greatest of hits. "The crime was committed on the other side. This whole thing was a takedown attempt at the President of the United States, and all of you should be ashamed for the way you reported it." I'm telling you. I mean, just from a theatrical standpoint. I mean, I know. Look, I, and I'm one of them. I would absolutely revel in impeachment hearings. I would hang on every word. We'd reschedule doctor's appointments. I wouldn't leave while the damn thing was on. I'd be rolling a recording just to make sure we got it all. Yeah. But you have to admit that turning up the pressure on him a notch at a time and watching him get crazier and crazier and crazier and waiting for that day when he stands in the Rose Garden and begins to tear his clothes off in front of the cameras, at which point we will know he is undeniably insane. You gotta admit that, well, I personally think there's more dramatic tension in that than, and that as an outcome would have a lot more, I don't know, ratings power than the crummy-ass ending of Game of Thrones that I didn't watch. But I confess that that's me. Question for Dr. Kincaid. Well, I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on the radio. Scott wants to know, what effect are the rapidly closing in walls around Trump having on the spirochetes and what's left of his brain? I'm guessing they're all jumping and banging around into one another in there like bugs on a hot plate. I saw, and I think it's on my Twitter timeline if you want to go look for it. I saw the coolest nature video last night. It was of a tree frog, you know, with the little round pads at the end of its, are they paws, hands, feet? And that tree, and it was nighttime. And that tree frog had just gone, it was sort of Bill Barr-like. In fact, if we could get him to do this, I think it would be a fun little science experiment, and we might find out if he actually is an amphibian. But that tree frog had and sucked in a firefly whole. Okay, big deal. So what? Well, apparently, if you're a firefly that gets eaten by a tree frog, once you're inside the tree frog, you go on being a firefly. And you do what fireflies do, and you blink. And a couple of seconds go by, and you blink. And it was lighting up the firefly from the inside. And the firefly seemed in no particular hurry to expire. So he kept on, you know, and it wasn't like it was blink, 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 blink. No, he was just sending out that same, hey, I'm here, you want to get laid, you know, which is what fireflies' lights mean. And so, even as the spirochetes began to reach their frenzy, where in the hell was he going with the firefly story, Marge? They're gonna continue doing what spirochetes do. As Scott said, you know, jumping and banging around into one another in there, like bugs on a hot plate, or like fireflies in a tree frog. Yeah. How to sacrifice a rubber chicken properly? First, steal a rubber chicken. No. Dave, in Talibandiana, writing from the blind, says, I've got a question about the goddess of and learning proper worship on this prayer meeting Wednesday. Do you use a hatchet and cut the heads off, or do you wring the rubbery necks of a rubber chicken? In the latter case, the other ironic devotees and I will be busy for the next month. You do neither. When you sacrifice a rubber chicken, it has to be immolated. it has to be set up as a burnt offering, because remember, where deities are concerned, the smell of burning anything is apparently a perfume unto their sacred nostrils. You know, even a word as simple as nostril. I wonder if any of those highfalutin multimillionaire podcasts out there include the word nostril. I'll bet it doesn't. Then again, I bet there's very precious little conversation about a firefly inside a tree frog either. Wait till we get to the restroom in the Japanese restaurant part of the program. I love that one too. But I felt like we had to deal with this because the story about Judge Ramos was pretty much breaking news. It had not happened yet at the time that he was throwing his tantrum earlier today in the Rose Garden. And if he was that bad this morning, well, doggies. Don't you know he's probably in rare form right now? Heather with a note. I'm late. Don't worry about it. It's not like we're going to make you go and clap the erasers after the program, Heather. I'm late, but I do believe every time I decide to say fuck it all, Trump does something really bad. And, well, do you know Democrats are going to get, if they're going to get his tax shit? Yes, they're going to get his tax shit. And Steve Mnuchin... Well, why not impeach his ass? I know. All the foregoing. But where Barr and Mnuchin are concerned, where you've got clear grounds for impeachment, it's a slam dunk. And you don't really care what the Senate does. Fuck the Senate. Make them come down for the trial. Yeah. And assuming that there's a Democrat in the White House on January 20th, 2021, well, who knows? Old Mnuch might even be met by some folks with some shiny bracelets for him to try on. Darlene in Connecticut, subject line, Todd's Stoke the Stroke. Nancy and the committee chairs have got to keep the impeachment thing hanging over Trump's head, plus all the other shit going down with the subpoenas in the courts. Today's performance really seems to be just another page in the Apprentice reality show drama, don't you think? Well, yeah. Or wrestling. I always default to wrestling, Darlene. That really is his, that's his métier. I think today's performance was in retaliation for what happened in court yesterday with the 41-page uphold on the subpoenas to the accounting firm. I really think Trump likes Nancy Pelosi. I really do. She's the mother he never, ever had. Yeah, Mary Trump was pretty much absent. It was his father that he worshipped. She owns him, Pelosi does. She really does. And knows how to get a toddler's tantrum out of him. P.S. Todd's right about Barr. Barr's beginning to freak me out, too. I think that's why I was dreaming about this giant green frog last night that turned into a mushroom to draw in a smaller frog and then morphed back into the giant frog that consumed the hapless little frog. You better be careful, Darlene. You're getting pretty Old Testament-y here. This happened several times, and I was trying to tell people that this giant frog morphed into this mushroom, etc., and no one was listening. Well, Cassandra, then there was this alligator on the golf course, and I was trying to warn a bunch of golfers and was thinking, shit, that thing is going to eat my dogs. I have no idea what any of this was about. Oh, welcome to the mind movies, Darlene. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Because, among other things, I have... All the time. Just all the time. If Edgar Cayce really was, had, you know, all those dreams, and I feel sorry for the man. I don't care what kind of dough he was raking in. He must have dreaded bedtime every night. And then there's Hamlet. to sleep, perchance to dream. Ah, but there's the rub. For what dreams may come.
Right.
And along the way, Tangerine Tiberius pissed and moaned some more about the cost of the Mueller investigation. That was another little breaking factoid that happened today. Turns out that we, the people of the United States, working on that more perfect union, we have spent more than three times the cost of the Mueller investigation sending that ignorant orange fascist wannabe to play fucking golf on courses that he already owns.
Hey, there's nothing in that goddamn thing that George W. Bush called a goddamn piece of paper. There's nothing in there that says I can't put emoluments on myself. And once I put the emoluments on, I can rub the emoluments as fast as I want to.
Then I ran across a story. Howard Stern shows up on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Just give it a second. At least it's not a Trump clip.
Hey, everybody, we're here with Mr. Howard Stern, author of Howard Stern Comes Again.
Yes.
Now, trashing Rosie was something you had in common with Donald Trump.
Yeah, well,
okay. How many times did you have Donald Trump on?
I too many to count. Donald Trump appears 11 times in my book, and it's a fascinating little ride through the book, because I would have Donald Trump on, and I say it in the book, he was maybe one of the best top five guests of all time. And why? He was wild. I thought I was wild. He would come on. He would start assigning numbers to women.
Time out. I'm playing this clip for a reason. Because I didn't watch it live. All I had was the clip. But the guy talking there is as much to blame for normalizing Donald Trump to the people of New York City and the wider world as any human being on this planet. You hear him talking, oh, he was wild. I thought I was wild. He was wild. He'd assign numbers to women. It's not wild. It's fucking gross. But then again, Howard has become a millionaire by doing gross things. Sophomoric things. Things that way, 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 way back, I probably laughed at. Honestly, I never heard that much Howard Stern. I did laugh my ass off at the movie, though. But in the name of filling 3 hours of radio with titillation, yeah, Howard Stern couldn't have done better than Donald Trump. And so instead of understanding that Donald Trump was a filthy, probably mobbed-up grifter, Howard Stern normalized him as some sort of innocuous, egomaniacal clown. You know, Pennywise in a bespoke suit.
Evaluating them. I'm like, is this guy for real? What is he doing?
Like rating them, 1 through 10.
1 through 10, I went, yes. Yeah. But I'm like, who does that? You know, it's pretty wild. Right. So anyway, I'm going home.
But in your mind, a great guest.
No, a great guest because he would say anything that came into his mind. He was completely unfiltered. He was talking about his daughter was the most attractive woman he ever met and how much he thought she was hot. What's with this crowd? What are you guys on? And give me some of it. But I, yeah, but I mean, it was wild every time. In the book, you'll read about, he gets into an argument with the Daily News gossip columnist, A.J. Benzer. They're fighting over a woman that they both had sex with on the air. I mean, it's crazy stuff. So this guy, easy. So, you know.
When was the last time you spoke to him?
I spoke to, this is such a long saga with Donald. He was calling me all through the campaign. I don't mean on the air, off the air.
For advice?
I think he wanted to touch base. He wanted my endorsement. And as I describe in the book, I'm a very big Hillary Clinton supporter. I liked Hillary Clinton very much.
Yeah, that's great. But that's a horse that's gone out of the barn and the barn's burnt down. And whatever political choices he made in 2016, so what? It's all those years when he was great for ratings, when he was really good for selling ads, you know, even before he, you know, because some of this stuff dates back to before Howard went to satellite and got to say fuck whenever he wanted to.
And, you know, so Donald said, would you please come to the Republican convention and speak on my behalf? And I went, oh, my God. You know, it's a weird thing because here a guy is asking you, you know, who asks me to do something like that? And very nice, but I had to find a way to say, look, I can't do this. He knows I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter.
Yeah.
And I
before firmly, he calls you, he knows.
Yeah, and I firmly believed that Donald did not want to run for president. I don't think it was serious. I don't think he wanted to be the president. I knew him. He had a great life at Mar-a-Lago. He was running around town. He played golf. He had a good time. And I remember, and I say this, the first time he said, I might run for president, he put out his first book. And I know some of the people involved in this, and they said, pretend like you're running for president, and you'll sell a lot of books. And he did it, and it worked. Second book he put out, it was again, like 4 years later, he said, I might run for president. And again, he said, oh, I'm selling books, and it helps sell books.
Yeah.
So what happened this time? He's on The Apprentice. The ratings were going down. And NBC was balking at giving him a raise. So what did he say? I'll run for president. I'll get a lot of press. And I really believe that Donald, this was a gimmick to get NBC to raise up his salary and to keep The Apprentice on.
Again, time out. Obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Why does God need a starship? He wanted a raise from NBC. Now, this is a guy who had created this image of himself in which he was rich, 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 rich. Richer than rich. Too rich to be bothered to count the money. But he's going to use a presidential run to tighten the screws and make him a more valuable property to NBC so NBC will give him a raise? Huh? What? What does he care? Why isn't he doing it for fucking free? He's so rich. Well, the answer is in the paperwork that Mazars will eventually have to turn over. The answers are in the paperwork that Deutsche Bank will eventually have to turn over. The answers are in the documents that Citibank will eventually have to turn over. And the answers are in his tax returns, which Steve Mnuchin will eventually have to turn over. But there's no doubt that Howard Stern is a profound radio talent. My God. And there's no doubt that he is a very intelligent man. Well spoken. But he was also a creature of his own medium. He's sitting there talking to Stephen Colbert. And yet Stephen Colbert has been more forthright with the American people about Donald Trump than Howard Stern has ever been. And son of a gun, he's just doing a reverse Trump there. See, this is the thing about guests on shows, and it's all transactional. It's every bit as transactional as, you know, having a fistful of $51 bills at the stage of a strip joint. You put the $1 bill in the garter, and she gives you a knowing look that makes you feel for a half a second like you're not the schlub you completely are. It is transactional. Yeah, he's not on Colbert because they're buddies. He's on Colbert because he's going to ride Donald Trump's back for a change and sell a book. Fine. I'm not criticizing that. But it seems that there is a deficit of introspection. Here's a guy who could have ended Donald Trump's dreams, but you know, he was just another guy in another transactional situation, so why the hell not? It's all log rolling. It's all back padding. Except when it's not. Except when it's people whose FHA mortgages get foreclosed on in record time when they're having trouble meeting the payments. Except when it's a child who's been abandoned in a concentration camp down by the border and dies alone uncared for and not even really accounted for. Except when it's women in far too many states whose lives are put at risk by Republicans who have been emboldened by that monstrosity squatting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Yeah, it's all just a bit, man. It's all just shtick. Until they still don't have clean water to drink and bathe in Flint. You get the idea. Donald Trump did not happen by himself. Donald Trump had a shit ton of help. And as shocked as he may sound about hearing Trump talk about his own daughter in sexual terms, you know, if she wasn't my daughter, I'd probably date her. You were great. You remind me of Ivanka. As shocked as he may sound now, you know what he never said? Donald Trump, you disgust me. Get off my air. Get away from my microphone. We're gonna take it apart into a million tiny pieces and throw it away and replace it with a new one, because you've just vulgarized a piece of inanimate technology. Never darken my studio again, Donald Trump. You're revolting. You're subhuman. You're a misanthrope. Nope. Because it was good
forbiddenness.
Lee in New York says, I remember listening to Stern on AM radio in New York City. I remember him telling the audience about John Lennon being killed the night before. I thought, come on, Howard, this isn't funny. Then his news guy reported it, and I thought, oh, my God, it's true. I remember that night, too. I was on the air as well. Obviously not in New York. But, yeah. I didn't believe it either. But it came across with like 6 or 7 bells, which was like 1 bell away from either a tornado or a nuclear disaster. This isn't, you know, this isn't some sort of broad brush condemnation of Howard Stern. It is a condemnation of how he handled Donald Trump and how he let the desire for shock value and titillation overcome what was his basic genius. And that's, well, that's sad. Obligatory Star Trek answer is the same reason Trump ran for president. He needs to get whatever he wants. What does God need with a starship? Oh, dear. Darlene, you can do this at your own peril. Well, not peril, but Scott in San Diego says, Darlene should check out dreammoods.com. There are entries and interpretations for alligators, dogs, frogs, golf courses, mushrooms, and a zillion other topics. Fascinating things, those dreams, says Scott. Oh, another loss. It's kind of an 0 for 3, maybe 0 for 2 and a half. The Department of Justice had today to release the search warrants for Michael Cohen. And what those search warrants disclosed is that Michael Cohen used the same shell companies that he employed for the transfer of funds from Donald Trump to Donald Trump's multiple mistresses and porn stars and whatnot. Well, those same shell companies were used to conduct business transactions with, quote, a company that is tied to a Russian oligarch, one Victor Vexelberg. And it was that connection that got the FBI all in a dither to hurry up and execute a search warrant. And particularly got the attention of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Mueller was quoted as saying, these shell companies are cheap. You can go online and set one up in Delaware, and what you usually do is set one up for each purpose, and that way you don't attract the attention of the FBI. Except when they when you use them to do business with a Russian oligarch. More witches. What do you burn apart from witches? More witches. Right. And by the way, while I am suspicious of him, we are not the only ones talking about, well, Julius Geezer being down to his last couple of spirochetes. I'm suspicious of George Conway because George Conway is not some innocent party who just happens to be married to Kellyanne the Repulsive. he's a Republican operative in his own right, and the enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of politics can very easily blow up in your face. So, like I said, I'm not inclined to trust him. But there he was today tweeting the text of the 25th Amendment. He followed that up by subtweeting one of Julius Geezer's tweets and including a link to the Adult Inpatient Psychiatry Services Unit at Walter Reed Hospital. It's not just us. Not by a long shot. No. No, it's not. So, yeah, that's the filibobster for this prayer meeting Wednesday. I have no idea what the little old blue-haired ladies made this evening because I was late getting back here. Doctor's appointments and things like that. It happens. But, you know, even though I do run the Cathedral of Common Sense, I got a long way to go before I'm going to even get close to the massive success of, say, James McDonald founded something called Harvest Bible Chapel back in 1988. Eventually, he had 7 locations and 13,000 rubes who showed up pretty near every Sunday. Too bad for him. He's under investigation. He's been canned from the church he founded. And he's under investigation by his own church's board. Because they're concerned that he tried to hire a hitman to knock off the guy who had formerly been married to his daughter. A guy by the name of Emmanuel Manny Bucker, B-U-C-U-R, used to be the bodyguard for James McDonald. A guy named Tony Groves was married to McDonald's daughter. And at one point on a motorcycle trip, because, you know, when you're a megachurch pastor, you gotta have several different means of spreading the good news of the gospel of Christ Jesus. And sometimes you do it on a poker run on your big old overpriced Harley Davidson motorcycle. And McDonald and Bucker were riding along. And at one point he said, hey, would you, oh, by the way, they were on their way to Kentucky to go to the Creation Museum. That makes it extra special good fun. They'd gotten along about Indiana and they'd stopped for breakfast. When McDonald looked to Bucker and said, I want you to take Tony out. Bucker said, you asking me what I think you're asking me? McDonald said, yep. Bucker said, no, I won't, and don't ever say that to me again. Yeah. It's a cautionary tale, just in case one should ever get, you know, up to the 13 mega church levels. I mean, we have a hard enough time maintaining one little tawdry cathedral of common sense. And I don't have much of a taste for homicide, so I think I'm safe. I hope I'm safe. Yeah, I'm safe. Yeah. But as far as prayer meeting Wednesday is concerned, by the way, we're 11 minutes into the second hour of the program. I hate talking about this. We had $375 to go. We're still at $375. So that's that. Looking for an update on the Deutsche Bank case. The over in the Mazars case, Julius Geiser's lawyers and the House Oversight Committee jointly have asked the D.C. Circuit to expedite the appeal. If it's expedited, the House agreed to suspend the deadline for the production of the documents. And that's kind of telling. You don't do that, I don't think, if you think you're going to win, or lose, rather. That is on the House Oversight side. Let's see. Unlike Judge Mehta, Judge Ramos only issued a one-page order. But from the bench, Judge Ramos in the Southern District said that the subpoena from the House Committee on Financial Services and the House Intelligence Committee had a legitimate legislative purpose. And so, watch this space. Meanwhile, because it is prayer meeting Wednesday, file this under the Department of Believe Them When They Tell You Who They Are. Because for all of us who are following all the legal stuff, you got to remember the maggots are over there. You know, the same people who oppose the teaching of Arabic numerals in our public schools. Because God bless America. What's that? Darlene says, yeah, Stern's extremely intelligent. That's the Stern I always like to listen to, the more serious intellectual, lawyerly Stern. He rolled that persona out, albeit rarely, and I think he does, in fact, have a law degree. Sadly, he made a better living with the raunch. I agree, he was supine when it came to Trump. Maybe a clashing of the two worlds that Stern inhabits. There's precedent for the run for pres claim to sell a book. Obama's Dreams of My Father got resuscitated after he decided to run for president, and he got another book deal out of his presidential run, The Audacity of Hope. All this according to Michelle's book, Becoming. Albeit Barack's good fortune with dreams was honestly ex post facto, whereas Trump's run for president does seem pretextual. And thanks for the thanks for the suggestion, Scott. Darlene says she'll check it out. Yeah, everybody's got to have a book now. If the word president has even been mentioned within, oh, say 125 words of a politician, you can bet there'll be a book. Oh, hey, thanks, Samson. Samson just jumped in and took us down to only $300 to go this evening. Thank you so, so very much. That's a huge, huge help. Yeah, Monique, I get it. I'm so sick and tired of whining Trump. It does get tiresome. But Jesus, again, he honed his craft in the WWE. He knows how to run a good wrestling match. Vince McMahon taught him well. And so, unfortunately, we get to watch the serious business of constitutional governance and self-governance become ratings fodder. Maybe we were headed this direction from the moment that, it was the first reality show, Stranded or whatever it was, CBS. Mark Burnett, again, remember, Donald Trump's buddy, who is keeping the lid on all of the outtakes from The Apprentice, but, oh, I never watched so much as a minute of it. Survivor. Maybe this is where the logical extension of that. But no, going back to the prayer meeting Wednesday stuff, please believe them when they tell you who they are. Because like I said, while we're here paying attention to things that are real, the people in the demon-haunted world and the maggots and the people who oppose the teaching of Arabic numerals, well, they're focused on magical shit, and they're in a high dudgeon and a hot lather, and they've got plans for you.
Israeli newspaper, Alabama's anti-abortion law, this is what Christian rule looks like in America.
I don't think Haaretz meant that in a good way. This, of course, is Rick Wiles.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. We Christians are standing up and pushing out Zionism. That's what we're doing.
What? We're pushing out Zionism? Apparently, somebody has told Rick Wiles that there's a big dollar to be had in 2019 in engaging in some straightforward, no kidding, unalloyed, unabashed anti-Semitism. He's been letting his little broken cross flag fly for a while, but he's really getting out in the open about it.
Zionism brought the slaughter of 65 million babies to America, and we're going to end it, and we are going to impose Christian rule in this country. Why are you imposing Judaism on me?
I don't see you wearing a funny hat, Rick. I don't think anybody's imposed Judaism on you. I'll bet you had bacon for breakfast this morning, dumbass. But he's deep into the Father Coughlin at this point.
Because that's exactly what's been done in America since 1973 with Roe v. Wade. Judaism was imposed on me, imposed on my Christian nation. And we became a Jewish nation that kills babies. That's against my Christian beliefs.
You know, I do this stuff every week. I pay special attention to it. And even I find myself, thank God we're not doing video, but then again, there's other reasons for that, too. Even I, my mouth hangs open and catching flies. Did you get... And by the way, maybe they're already on the case, but kind of, where's the ADL? I mean, this guy hates Muslims, too, so hopefully he's on CARES radar as well. But this is the blood libel. This is the essence. This is a recitation from a piece of anti-Jewish hatred that has been, for some reason or another, getting traction for 1700 years. The blood libel. Now,
imposed on my Christian nation, and we became a Jewish nation that kills babies. That's against my Christian beliefs.
Jews kill babies. That line is at least 1,500 years old. It was the source of almost countless slaughters, pogroms. The Jews steal Christian babies and use their blood to make their matzah. That is what is meant by the blood libel. Jews are poisoning the wells. That was a common refrain during the Black Plague. It got so bad that the Pope at Avignon had to issue a papal edict to stop murdering Jews in the name of Jesus, who was a Jew. When they tell you who they are, when they leave no question who they are, believe them. When they say that we are going to impose Christian rule on this country, don't chuckle. Ha, 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 he's crazy. Because other people in other years, other decades, other centuries, other millennia have chuckled too and died at the hands of people like Rick Wiles or people weaponized by people like Rick Wiles. Imposed Judaism? Lee in New York says he looked in his pants and is wondering why it's not as awesome as he expects. Not a moil, just DNA.
Judaism became the law of the land in America. That's precisely what the courts have ruled. They have based their rulings on the Zohar, on the Talmud. And now we have Zionistic Talmudic law ruling this country and resulting in the death of millions of babies.
Hold on a minute. He seems to be talking, I'm guessing he's talking, I'm extrapolating, that he's talking about abortion. You can go and read, well, don't start with Roe. Start with Griswold versus Connecticut.
then go to Roe v. Wade. Read them both. Then go and read Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And I dare and defy you to find the word Zohar. I thought that was a movie wasn't that Sacha Baron Cohen? Never mind. The word Zohar is not to be found. A backhanded reference to Zohar is not to be found. The word Ra'az, R-A-H-O-Z, Zohar backwards, is not to be found. There's no reference to the Talmud. There's no reference to... And yet this guy, not long ago, was hooting and hollering like a barn owl on acid about the need to display the Decalogue in public. And how we've lost our Christian values because we can't put up the Ten Commandments in our schools. But he's found him a niche. By the way, the little cross pin he's got on his lapel is sort of an iron skillet black. Maybe it is an iron cross. It's not a Maltese cross like the Germans in the First World War.
And Ms. Cohen, we Christians are standing up. And we're telling you, we're done with Zionism. We're done with your values. We are going to impose Christian values in America again, whether you like it or not. You represent less than 2% of the population of this country.
So how can less than 2% of the population of this country... Is it hypnotism? Oh, Jesus, he'll probably think it.
How does 2% rule the rest of the nation? I know how.
Fear.
You control the banks. You control the technology. You control the media.
You control the pews.
And then you buy out the churches. Move that money around, and those crooked preachers take your money.
Wow. I'm so old. I can remember that a mere mention of it's all about the Benjamins was enough to get the Republican Party in a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy over one lone member of the House of Representatives. Let me know. I can't watch the whole news cycle, but let me know. If you see Louis Asparagus Gohmert, or Steve Nazi Cantaloupes King, or Jim Shorts Jordan, or Mo Brooks Les Brames, or Kevin McCarthy, let me know if you, because this guy votes Republican. It's not like he's running out there and no. This guy is a Republican. He's not some sort of goddamn dope-smoking independent libertarian. He's a Republican, Sunshine. Let me know if Steve, I had no idea those guys wearing the pillowcases over their heads were Klansmen. Scalise utters a word against Rick Wiles, who is saying things that only get said by Nazis and skinheads. Let me know, and I'll take your silence as proof that none of them have, that they have been as silent about this as a graven goddamned.
That's exactly how you do it.
Ow, that hurt. I bet that was probably the Zionists did that. Believe them when they tell you who they are. And the thing is, if this guy's out there preaching it, that means there are people out there listening to it, eating it up. This wasn't a year ago. This wasn't right after Charlottesville. This was a week ago tonight. Along the way, during the same rant, he said that anybody who supports a woman's right to make decisions about the workings of her own body will spend eternity in a hell where that person will be, quote, aborted continuously forever by demons. Don't ask how that works. It's complicated and it's magical and probably involves the ingestion of really bad acid that's more strychnine than acid. But what pissed him off was that a woman named Deborah Nussbaum Cohen said that the law as passed in Alabama and signed into law represents, quote, a threat to my religious freedom as a Jew. Because according to classical Jewish text and most rabbinic interpreters, a developing embryo or fetus is not an unborn child or a person, but has the legal status of an appendage of the pregnant woman. It is part of her body, not a separate person, until the moment that a majority of a viable baby capable of independent life has been born. That prompted that screed, the likes of which was last heard in Hochdeutsch about 1935. But from a religious perspective, what this highlights is the fact that what this guy believes, even under Christian doctrine, and dogma is heretical. A wad of cells smaller than a grain of rice has no agency. Plain and simple. On the other hand, this is not to say that, like I said, this prayer meeting Wednesdays are without a doubt ecumenical in nature, because the other side doesn't get a pass either. I confess, Texas T pointed this story out to me. Oh, thank you, Kat. Thank you, Kat, very kindly. We're now down below $300. We're down to $275. Which, if I... we're getting close to knocking out yesterday. Thank you, Kat, in Ohio. Thank you very much. I don't know why I'm not seeing my notifications, but I just checked, and it is much appreciated indeed. The other side does come in Oh, wow. Oh, what a cool picture. Arnold sends a photo in. It's more fun to be a heathen on an antique Honda. I will not argue with you. You may be aware that this last weekend, Saturday night, was the finals of the Eurovision contest for 2019. And for reasons that plumb evade me, you know, the first word in Eurovision is Euro. But it's become such a worldwide phenomenon that it takes in most of the planet anyway. So they decided to have their finals, silly people, in Tel Aviv. Because Tel Aviv is kind of hip and happening and cosmopolitan. But it's still in Israel, and Israel is a theocracy. It is ruled by the weirdest of the weird far right wing of hyper orthodox Judaism.
And so consequently, the Eurovision people went to great pains to make sure that the Eurovision finals did not begin until after sundown on Saturday evening passed. Nonetheless, you can't just put up a show without doing any front-end work. You got to make sure the... I mean, it's not like this program where, you know, if the equipment works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So a bunch of fundamentalist weirdos gathered to protest the Eurovision production. And they chanted Shabbos, Shabbos, Shabbos. You will forgive me if at the mention of Shabbos, 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 the first thing that entered my mind was, of course, Walter Sobchak in The Big Lebowski saying, "I don't roll on Shabbos." Well, it wasn't the first thing that entered the minds of the people who were counter-protesting, the weirdos. And some of the people who were counter-protesting the weirdos were, you know, those sin-infested women folk. Oh, thanks, Glenn. Hey, Glenn, thanks a bunch. We're down to 270. Thank you, Glenn. We can do this. No, as the bizarre fundamentalist theocrats chanted Shabbos, Shabbos, Shabbos in protest of the fact that people who probably weren't even Jewish were doing the tech work to make sure that the Eurovision thing came off without a hitch and actually made Israel look good. And, well, Israel needs all the good PR it can get right now, frankly. No, the weirdos were screaming, Shabbos, Shabbos. I don't know how they managed to do that without violating the rule, but, well, rules were made to be bent. More on that in a moment. But the women who were counter-protesting the theocratic weirdos drove them away. No, 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 no. They didn't march around them blowing horns until the walls of Jericho come tumbling down, tumbling down, tumbling down. No. They didn't blow their horns around Jericho, 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 and the walls come tumbling down. They took off their shirts. Really? And all of a sudden, the fundamentalist, misogynistic, super-duper, double-plus bad, double-secret probation orthodox started running away like they had seen the devil himself, or, as the case may be, herself. Yes, yes, the orthodox ran away because they saw the lace-covered titties of doom. The women were wearing bras. But because that orthodoxy is as vile as a fundamentalist Christian, that fundamentalism is as vile as anything going on in Iran. Because it's not the given faith, it's the fundamentalism that makes it toxic. The women weren't about to get arrested for, you know, naked boobies. But even the sight of a woman in a bra, or several of them, were enough to make these dweebs flee in absolute horror. They probably had to go home and bathe in chicken blood or something from the fucking Bronze Age because they were so goddamn terrified because they'd seen the uncleanliness of the bearer of our sin, the titty. And then I found out another thing, and NPR reported it, so it's not fake news, it's not made up. Did you know, well, did you know that there is there's a piece of fishing line that goes all the way around several cities on planet Earth, one of which is New York, New York, that keeps the almighty creator of the universe from smiting people who go outside the house on Shabbos? Yeah, because the same people who don't believe in vaccinating their children against the fucking measles are afraid that their invisible friend who loves them so much will smite the fuck out of them if they leave the house. And so, like, 2,000 years ago or something, they came up with a dodge. No, not the car. A scam. A workaround. It's got a word. It's called an eruv, E-R-U-V. And it runs all the way around, wrapped around posts, or attached to posts, runs all the way around the perimeter of New York City from 1st Street to 126th, and forms a symbolic enclosure. And it's a 2,000-year-old Dodge. It reminds me of that story, perhaps apocryphal, of the great prophet William Charles Duncanfield, who, notorious atheist that he was, he was sickly toward the end. And was said to have once been seen by one of his pals sitting on the front porch of his home reading a Bible, and his buddy hollered out, "Fields, you old atheist, you, what are you doing reading the Bible?" And Fields, in his characteristic manner, looked up and looked at his friend, perhaps over his pince-nez glasses, and said, "Looking for a loophole." Well, this is a loophole. Because if you're one of these fundamentalist weirdos, you can't even carry your house keys outside or carry a wallet or a purse or push a baby stroller. You can't pick anything up if your baby falls down, like mashes its little nose on it. Well, suffer quietly, kid. God loves you. And so what this dodge does, this fishing line, is it extends the household, where you're not supposed to leave, into the city itself. The whole city of New York becomes the household on the Sabbath day. You'd think God would have seen through that, and maybe he would if he was real. But I read the story, I double-checked it. Yeah, it's real. I mean, it turns out that it costs something on the order of $150,000 a year to maintain this fiction. Apparently, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York is a real problem. What with those big balloons snapping the fishing line and all. And so as soon as that's over, they dispatch workers to make sure there's no breaks in the fishing line. Yeah, I double-checked. I went and looked up the pound test line you want, and it's like sun perch, you know, little fish like that. You can get by with a 2 or 3 pound test line. Use 5 pound test line for your smaller catfish and bass. But then I got up there to 30 pound test line, and it said, "Yep, there it was, 30 pound test line, tuna, marlin, Jehovah." It does nobody any harm. As George Carlin once famously observed, religion's like a lift in your shoes. If it makes you feel better about yourself, cool. But let's not go nailing lifts onto the feet of the natives. You think that $150,000 might have paid for vaccinations so that parts of New York aren't positively eaten up with measles? Well, that's true. Lee points out, not the whole city. New York is the five boroughs. You're talking about Manhattan. Well, yeah, it is. Everybody else is going to hell or something. But Manhattan, yeah, $150,000 a year. I regret the error. But New York City's not the only one. But now, next time I'm there, I got to see the fishing line that stops a god. What are you talking about, Monique? I'm done with people. Why do you West Virginians keep wanting us New Yorkers to feel sorry for you? I'm done. Well, okay. The story was about $150,000 worth of fishing line around Manhattan. It's kind of a fish story. It, in a way, Irish Dave, it's more of a Shaggy Dog story. Reminds me of The Loophole, says Flavio, by comedy duo Garfunkel and Oates. Not safe for work, but funny as hell. I'll check it out after the program. So, I know now that if I really need to put the kibosh on the Almighty, I can do it with a quick trip to Dick's Sporting Goods. That's an unpaid product placement, by the way. Like I said, we're ecumenical on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Everybody is... everybody's open to the critique. I mean, look. If I had fishing line around my house, and I said that... Well, then again, it's good. You know, when the Jehovah's Witnesses show up, it's best I don't have any fishing line because I might be tempted to... Never mind. No, I saw the map. It's not all of Manhattan. It's just a whole lot of Manhattan from 1st to 126th. And it's a big enough island, Lee. That's still a lot of fishing line. But I am going to... I think just to be on the safe side, I'm going to get me some Stren. If you could... if I was DuPont, DuPont makes Stren, I think. Strong enough to stop a god! That's a hell of a claim. And they'd probably have to say, well, yep, stop, yep, yep, nobody's been smited lately. Isn't religion just delightful? Yes, Irish Dave. Go to pick up some of the one true monofilament. Monofilament for a right. From Dick's. Or Hibbett's. No, Hibbett's is more tennis shoes anymore. Back when Hibbett's got started back down in Alabama, they had everything. But now it's mostly clothing and shoes. You can buy a baseball or a baseball bat there. I don't think you can get fishing gear. Sort of puts a whole new spin on the story from the Gospels about how lo, I will make you fishers of men. Here on the Sea of Galilee, we use 10-pound test line. That's a funny little God. And so, let's see. We're down to 270. That's a big deal. See if we can get it down to 2. That'd be nice. About an hour and a little bit more left in the program. Let's see what Scott's got on his mind. Hey, Scott.
Boy, it boggles the mind, Bob.
Does it boggle?
To think, on the Sabbath, the Almighty finds his rest, or her rest, fly fishing for errant Hebrews. Makes you wonder. Hang on, I'm feeding the cat. Yes, chirps. Come on.
Well, I mean, shouldn't he be resting too?
Maybe
recreation is rest.
Recreate. The rest period happened after 6 days of creating. So, on the Sabbath, it's a good time to kick back and recreate.
Yeah.
You've seen Bill Maher's movie from about 10 years ago, Religious.
Oh, yeah.
He does a segment in there about a guy in Israel, a technician, inventor, who comes up with these devices that can legally perform functions that are otherwise on the Sabbath. And one was a wheelchair and one was a make phone calls without breaking the
I think I've found the source of our audio problem.
Oh, what is that?
Bad wire.
Oh. You need some of that high test.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go. I don't know. Would 30-pound strand, a 30-pound test line strand qualify as fiber optic cable? I don't know.
Greater minds than mine. But getting back to...
Lee is helping us geographically.
Yeah.
And notes that the UN is outside the fishing line.
Is that good or bad?
Well, at least unlike in Alabama and Mississippi, Georgia, et cetera, at least they're not imposing their beliefs on anybody else.
Well, that's not saying much.
In 2019, not being Alabama is a pretty big damn thing.
My mind, and I know this is your home state we're talking about, but it probably ain't the place you grew up. Okay. And I was thinking the other day, with Alabama's latest stunt, and that's all it is a stunt.
It's a stunt until Brett Kavanaugh gets hold of it.
Yeah, well, if the Almighty took it in his mind to administer an enema to planet Earth, I believe the nozzle would be inserted into Alabama. That's just my...
Oh, I don't know. I've got a story out of Ohio here that gives the Buckeye State a pretty good run for the money.
Ohio.
Remember last week we talked about the goober who introduced the insurance portion of the latest assault on a woman's right to choose in Ohio?
Yeah.
Remember that guy?
Yeah. Does it get worse?
It does. He's a real Lulu, as opposed to a fake Lulu.
Yeah.
Remember, his name is representing John Becker.
Oh, yeah, Becker. Yeah, I saw that today. Go ahead.
Yeah. He's a real Becker head.
Indeed.
One might even, here in the land of the hillbillies, suggest that he's a Becker Wood.
Yeah, a tiny Becker head.
Listen here, Becker Wood.
See, that's part of the problem.
He's the guy that, when he got busted on it, said, "Well, I'm leaving that for the scienticians to figure out." Oh, no, because he, having been thoroughly scorched.
Was he the one that had trouble understanding why, how and why certain forms of birth control work?
Among other things.
Yeah, oh, God.
Preventing implantation of the ovum.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, there at the Cincinnati Inquirer, they decided to let him write an op-ed. I don't know how they lay out the Cincinnati Inquirer. It might have been right next to the funny pages.
I don't remember.
Or one page away, or maybe it was on the next page after where the Sudoku is, which is where the smart people stop.
If memory serves, I believe in the Cincinnati Inquirer and the long-gone Cincinnati Post in the afternoon, the editorial page was in the back of the front section on the right side, or the left side, and opposite it were the op-eds and things. The left side was the editorial cartoon and the regular official editorials, and the op-ed features were opposite that on the right-hand page, if memory serves. Well, go ahead.
Well, the fact of the matter is, the Cincinnati Inquirer let him, they published an op-ed by him explaining why he did what he did relative to a woman's right to choose and the insurance industry.
Insert the word diminishing right to choose. I would think you would want to do...
No, I prefer the word constitutional myself, you know, just like owning a gun.
Yeah, but if they have their way, it's a diminishing right.
Even that, I think, is too participially liberal.
Oh, God.
Let's go for their perception of an unnecessary right. Okay. Here's the fun part. Trying to explain, or trying to make it seem like his act of rampant misogyny and bigotry was something more or less than what it was, he declared his wonder at the fact that medical schools are not teaching a theory developed by a doctor in 1917 that says that you can, in fact, remove an ectopic embryo from the fallopian tube and stick it in the uterus where it never was in the first damn place.
Now, wait a minute. 1917, you say? Boy, medicine must have been awfully advanced, Bob, for a medical journal to include a piece along those lines. They probably weren't too far away from bleeding and humors in 1917.
Well, maybe demons, black bile.
Maybe they had advanced somewhat. Have they gotten to the part of about pasteurization and what causes, what makes?
Well, here in America, they were probably the Baptists were probably preaching against Louis Pasteur. When they took a break from preaching against Charles Darwin.
God. So tell me, what did the medical text of 1917 say, Bob?
Well, it didn't say much of anything. Becker certainly didn't provide it. But he did say that, here's the question. A doctor set him straight, you know, who a doctor who deals with gynecological surgery even. He said, Dr. Grossman has all the information. He's not saying the procedure is impossible or can't be done. He's saying that it's not standard medical care and is not a treatment option endorsed by the American College of Gynecologists. So House Bill 182 allows for insurance coverage for an experimental procedure that has not yet been standardized. So this jackass just went from saying that he wanted something that couldn't be done to be done to saying, okay, well, we can't really do it now, but why don't we experiment on some women instead?
Jeez. See, this is what happens when people in one field of endeavor try to branch off and concern themselves with matters in another field of endeavor, like Trump and journalism. His big thing is fake news. Mr. Becker, who doesn't seem to be able to be happy in his little pasture where he is, in the Ohio House or Senate or somewhere. No, he's got to go off into medicine. Well, if he wanted to be a practitioner of medicine, he should have taken the courses required for that. Yet another reason I'm glad 19 years ago I made my way from Ohio to California. I've got a whole list of reasons. And the weather was way up there at the top. But time has shown me now, nearly 20 years on, that I made the right move.
I think if you ask the leadership of the city of San Diego, they'd say, we're mighty proud to have Scott here, and it's Cincinnati's loss.
Well, maybe so. Maybe so. I wonder, if it's all right, I wanted to get back to Rick Wiles and some of his crazy pronouncements that you listed today. And to echo what you were saying about the anti-Semitic Nazi talking points are what he was spouting. And I know this from the late 60s and early 70s in various phone conversations and visits bearing hamburgers and Pepsi Cola to the Nazis over in Arlington. Mind you, to get into their head, I was not a fan of their belief system, but I was curious to know what causes a person to go that way in life. And as you were listing the things that Rick Wiles was saying, it triggered a couple of memories of these conversations. And they had it all laid out, Bob, about the Jews being responsible for everything. First and foremost, their big thing back then was the Jews control the media.
Is this before or after the Jews control the money?
Well, they went into that, but I don't want to concern ourselves with that in this conversation. Their big thing at the time in the late 60s, early 70s was the Jews controlled the media. And by media, they mean the newspapers and TV. Well, TV in America back then was ABC, NBC, and CBS. Now, ABC, one of the prime people at the beginning of ABC as a television outlet, was a man named Leonard Goldenson, who was Jewish. And over at CBS, you had William S. Paley, who was Jewish. And over at NBC, you had
Now, David is this... Is, okay, just to be clear on our timeline
yeah,
here.
Yeah, sure.
Is this before or after Richard Nixon was looking at Henry Kissinger saying, Henry, we could set this country to rights, but it's the Jews, Henry, the Jews?
Well, let's see. That would have been, when was the taping system installed? I believe it was installed in
70-ish?
Yeah, around 70, and was taken out in 72, no, late 71 or into 72. So this would have been before, or maybe around that time. But getting back to the network, so ABC, you had Leonard Goldenson. CBS, you had William S. Paley. NBC, you had David Sarnoff. At the New York Times, you had the Sulzbergers,
right.
Okay. Over at the Washington Post, you had Eugene Meyer, whose daughter was Catherine Graham, the Jewish, okay. The Jews, as we all know, Bob, during the very early days of the U.S. Civil Rights Movement, it was the Jews who financed the Civil Rights Movement.
In large part,
and were
yes.
Big, the big supporters of Dr. King and others, who, according to
and in fact gave their lives.
Yeah, yeah, and it goes back a little further to the turn of the 20th century, the late 18th century, with Karl Marx, who was a Jew, because a lot of these are commies. Okay, Karl Marx. They told me that Lenin was a Jew, and that wasn't his real name anyway. Well,
Vladimir Ilyich Leonov? Leonov?
He may have been Jewish, but I tend to think people of that time, of that place, were Russian Orthodox. They tried to tell me that Joseph Stalin was a Jew, and I know full well that he was an altar boy or an acolyte in the Orthodox Church in Russia, you know. But everything to them is the Jews. It's the Jews, Henry. Okay?
Right. And later on, he would reprise that big hit on tape by saying, Reverend Billy, the moral degradation of this country can be laid at the feet of the Jews, Billy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Speaking to Billy Graham. And Billy Graham later actually mustered up a molecule of shame and said, I should have rebuked him for that, but I did not, for which seek forgiveness.
What Reverend Graham needs to do is rise up from the dead and take his son, Franklin, into hand and, you know, knock some fucking sense into him, because he's breaking bad all over the place. I don't know, Bob. It's crazy. We live in crazy times, you know? But now, is Rick Wiles a fan of Trump? You said he's a Republican.
Oh, he's a hardcore maggot.
Well, wait a minute. You can't swing a prayer shawl around the Trump administration without hitting a Jew or two. I give you
Jared.
What's the son-in-law's? Jared and Ivanka.
And Mnuchin. I'm pretty sure that's not an old Irish name.
No, I don't think so. I don't know what county he's from, if it's Ireland, with a name like Mnuchin, Bob. And you were talking about rabbis, and you alluded to circumcisions. It reminds me of an old story, Bob, about a rabbi.
No, I didn't say anything about circumcisions. Lee said something about circumcisions.
About looking, yeah, you were quoting. Oh, you were quoting.
I was reading an email from Lee.
Yeah. But there was an old rabbi whose life's work in the congregation was to perform the circumcisions.
The bris.
The bris. And for some odd reason, he would save the little tiny foreskins.
Oh, that's just gross.
After 30 years service, he was going to retire, and he had a sack full of these.
I don't know if I want this joke to be finished.
But wait a minute, Bob. So one of the assistants decided it would be a lovely gesture to fashion them into a token representing the rabbi, the old rabbi's 30
years of service, yes.
Of service. And they presented it. They wrapped
it.
Oh,
Jesus, please.
And then they wrapped it. And he unwrapped it and pulled out what? A little tiny change purse, Bob. And he was not impressed. And they said, ah, but rabbi, when you rub it, you get a steamer trunk. So that's my little story.
Oh, you're going to hell.
Yeah, I know.
That was an old joke when it was being told in the Catskills.
I know. But it's Wednesday. What do you want? I've had a rough week. No, actually, I've had a very pleasant week.
Except for your caffeine binge, I mean, sure.
These last 2 days since the inspection and the end of housework, as we know it, I have kicked back royally. And it's such a liberating thing to be able to do that after all that intensive focus and...
Oh, and by the way, you've had your grammar corrected.
Have I?
Yes, Lee in New York wants you to know. You made the reference, you can't swing a prayer shawl. Scott should have said, swing a tallet.
I knew there was a word for it.
It has a name, Helen.
I know.
Tallet, Helen. It has a name.
Well, I was going to say...
That's three straight programs with a Helen Keller reference. Once again, not on any radio program or rodeo program in America. Yeah. Only here.
I was going to say you couldn't swing a yarmulke, but the diameter of a yarmulke is not going to hit anything, no matter how hard you swing it, unless it's on a piece of fishing line, you know? So I was told once
upon a time, and this was many, many years ago, that I was positively adorable in a little white satin yarmulke. It was for a wedding.
Yeah.
And the congregation lovely came and said, you know, that looks good on you. Well, thank you.
I think I went to my neighbor had his bar mitzvah when he was 13. And I was invited, and I think I pocketed the yarmulke. I'm sure that in the Catholic Church growing up...
It was mine to keep. It had my name on it.
Well, no, mine
was. And the names of the wedding celebrants and the date and all of that. On the other hand, when I went to the Catholic wedding, the Irish priest came up to me and said, "What's a nice boy like David doing hanging out with a bunch of heretic heathens like you?" I said, "Just lucky, I guess."
Well, I don't have my purloined yarmulke anymore.
I don't think you purloined it.
I did. It was, I didn't put it back into the yarmulke bin or basket or whatever it was. I pocketed it. And I took it home, and some years later I got high and decided I wanted to fashion a little propeller onto it so that I could wear it that way.
Oh, you are a heathen.
I botched the job, Bob. I just botched it all to hell. And that didn't work out either, so I think I tossed it. Do you go to hell for not only stealing but tossing a yarmulke? Aren't those kind of religious
it depends on which rabbi you're asking. You might get the same answer. Sorry, but there's no hell. There's no second act. You know, it's here.
Yeah.
Do it or don't.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to know that. I've known it, I think, it's on some level for some time. But so how is it that Rick Wiles can go off in the way that he has to stir up his listeners when he's a big Trump fan?
Well, no. Hold on. Before you even go there.
Okay.
Riddle me this, Batman.
All right.
How is it, and I know the answer already. The answer is, this is sort of like Jeopardy, because our side is terrible at this. Now, buzz in, Scott. Boop, boop. No, Bob buzz. Right. No, Bob beeps in. Boop, boop.
Okay.
How can a Trump-supporting preacher get away with using talking points from 1933 Nazi Germany and not be called out by a single fucking Democratic politician? Oh, you've won the final Jeopardy, Bob!
Well, that's another question. Why aren't we mentioning it?
Well, I am.
Well, I know, but you would think that there are a fair number of representatives and senators and Democratic higher-ups who would hear this and say, what the fuck?
They have to know about it. And two, they have to have some degree of talent for pointing it out.
Well, see, that's why
that's
I wish 0 we
for
had,
2.
Had Al Franken around. Oh, by the way, he's got a podcast now.
Great, another competitor.
Well, I'm sorry, Bob, I'm just saying.
You know, you're as bad as Joe Scarborough. Joe Scarborough goes on every morning and says, I don't understand why the Democrats aren't going on over on Fox. And I keep waiting for him to say, you know, they called me in on the carpet and told me to quit promoting Fox News on this program. If they want to come on, have them come on here. But no, it never happens.
I was taking a slurp of coffee. Well, no, I don't mean to. Now, friends, if you want to check out that podcast, don't do it now. Wait until another time when Bob's not on. Hopefully that will remediate my error. But, and I personally think that some of the Democrats ought to go on to Fox. I don't think there's any harm in it. Not that they're going to change a lot of minds, but there are some people who will hear what's being said and will take note and might come over. I mean, I welcome people with open arms if they're willing to acknowledge their error by doing the right thing.
Wait, time out, because we made a huge mistake earlier.
Did we?
Yes. You mentioned Jared Kushner. I mentioned Steve Mnuchin. And Ron and Raleigh said, wait a minute, did you forget? Stephen Miller is the ultimate self-hating Jew.
Well, yeah, there's Stephen Miller.
I mean, when you're so bad that you get called out by your own family for how hateful you are, because you read that, you remember that a few months back, they said... I think it was his uncle said, attitudes like his would have kept him from even coming into being, because attitudes like his would have gotten his grandparents murdered instead of having them come here to America.
Yeah. Well, he's that little bald-headed stooge who doesn't like immigrants. That's Miller, Stephen Miller, right?
I mean, that's the beginning of a description. I think you're just touching on the surface of his awfulness, but right.
Yeah.
Once said it would be if another immigrant, I think I'm paraphrasing here, if another immigrant never entered the United States again, it would be too many.
Well, no, wait a minute. Where his people aren't from here?
No, they're not. They're not Apache or Comanche, Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Anishinaabe. No. Algonquin, Pequot.
My second wife was a big fan of the Indians and did all that she could to remediate the mistreatment of our native people by going to the casinos every weekend. And that's one of the reasons she is no longer my second
and in
wife.
Paying an involuntary tax upon the unreasonably optimistic.
Yeah, I went a few times for bingo. I mean, I like bingo and slots as much as the next guy, but not enough. It's not like church. I don't want to go every week.
Hey, hold on. Does anybody really like it? Because the only fun I can imagine out of it is the winning part.
No, see, it's the expectation of winning, I think. It's like, why do we play the lottery? Like the other night, I found an old lottery ticket in my pocket for the Powerball, and happened to be at the place where I normally buy them, and checked it with the little gizmo that you put the ticket under and the light shines and reads the barcode, and I won $4. And it was a time when I needed $4. You know, now that barely makes a discernible dent into the money I have spent over the years on losing tickets, or as I call them, defective tickets. And the stores won't take them back, Bob. What's with that?
Yeah, I know. It's the same thing with flowers. You buy them, you buy them, you take them home, they die, and you're not allowed to complain about it.
But, I mean, every so often I decide I'm going to buy a ticket. And it's not really with the expectation of winning, other than there's always that chance, you know? It's like lightning could strike you in certain circumstances. And, you know, but it's really just an exercise in optimism, like you say. It's nothing more than that.
Oh, and by the way, you have been. I think this can be filed under absolution. You were raised Catholic. Oh, you get absolute.
Yeah.
You understand. You not get.
Oh,
well,
yes.
I mean, you comprehend.
Of course.
Lee in New York wants you to know that since the story has stuck with you so long, that there must be a little bit of guilt perhaps attaching to it. Please tell Scott that he did not steal the yarmulke unless he took it off the other person's head.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that distinction existed.
Well, not for you. You know, the Roman Catholic Church would burn you at the stake for it.
Well, that's why... You remember why I don't have my second wife anymore? That's also why I'm not a Catholic anymore. I didn't like their theology. It didn't work for me.
The church was your first wife? You were a priest?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
It's a similar concept. Leaving things behind. Moving on to something hopefully better. Or nothing. It sometimes works. But thank you, Lee, for letting me know that. I had no idea that theft requires a victim in the sense of another person.
Right.
I wouldn't have thought about that. Well, I'm glad. I wasn't feeling especially guilty. I was just remembering.
Well, it stuck with you, Scott, and I think you know, Lee's good people and did not want you to be beating yourself up.
Well, you know, something I've wondered, I'm sure there are probably those who haven't contacted you about it, but who have wondered, why did Scott hang around Nazis in his formative years? Well, it was a curiosity thing. I am eminently curious about what causes people...
Well, no, careful. There's hanging around, and that involves sort of standing there and swapping baseball cards and you know, opining on the relative merits of the horrible bubble gum that was in the packages.
But and I would then, drive then... over there with hamburgers that I didn't spit into. You know, and visit with them and talk with them. I don't know. Maybe there was something more than curiosity. I don't think so.
I think it's probably a matter of it provided some evidence of I hate to say goodwill, but you know, and that you wanted to hear what they had to, not that you agreed with them, but. Again, it's like the Rick Wiles clip. You have to hear them talking, or else you're liable to think that they're just some innocuous bunch of cranks.
Yeah, harmless fools. But getting back to my question about him, if he is so hateful against the Jews and seemingly everybody else, how does he justify being so close and adherent to the principles?
Well, that's actually a split of opinion among those freaks.
What about Trump?
No, among the Nazis.
I'm having trouble keeping track of the hardcores,
for instance, the guy who shot up the mosque in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
He said he admired him sorta, but he was too close to the Jews.
I remember that.
On the other hand, there are some Nazis who say, well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, Jared's not as observant as they say, and Ivanka probably still likes bacon. And besides, they're helping us achieve our larger goals. You see how that works?
Yeah, okay.
And so this guy is maggot through and through, and he's playing, I'd say, to that latter group who think that, well, you know, okay, so what? Stephen Miller, Jared Kushner, Steve Mnuchin. Because there's, you know, there's a word, capo, and there's another word, Sonderkommando, for people who collaborated with the Nazis in order to obtain certain privileges.
Yeah.
And they were odious and despised. But by the same token, they, I guess they lasted, you know, they were the last ones into the ovens. Which, well,
they were required to pull the door closed after them. Who knows? I don't know.
I mean, you can look up capo, K-A-P-O.
Some apparently survived, because wasn't there a famous case of either a Lithuanian or a Polish?
Oh, are you talking about John Demjanjuk?
Yeah, where was he from? He was like a prison capo.
No, no, I don't think he was a capo. I mean, there were some, but let me see.
It's been a long time since I remember, you know, mentioned his name or thought of him even.
No, he was a former soldier in the Soviet Red Army and a POW during the Second World War.
But he tried to be friendly with them once he was captured. With the Germans, I mean.
I mean, he was a war criminal.
And he was one of the ones that lived here for years and got thrown out.
Yeah, he's an auto worker in Ohio.
Yeah. There we go again with Ohio.
It's a long streak in this country.
Where is Rick Wiles based? Where does he work out of?
Let me see. I closed him out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're all over the country. I think he's in Northern Virginia.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez. That's my old stomping ground. Oh, getting back to Stern, on with Colbert last night.
Yeah.
I record the shows. I never watch it. Very seldom will I watch anything on commercial TV live, because I like to zip through the commercials, you know, with the old DVR. But I found that show, and I've never, let me preface it this way, I've never been a big fan of Stern. I give him his due as a talented radio person, okay, revolutionizing his little section of the industry and being a success therein. But I've never been like a Sterniac.
Vero Beach, like Florida.
That. Oh, really? Well, honestly, that's a different deal. You get down below the scorch curtain, and anything can happen. God, Florida. But getting back to Stern, on with Colbert, even though I'm not a big Stern fan, it was a refreshing change of pace for me as a fan of the Colbert show. Because in recent months, I've gotten more than a little burned out on his one-note samba regarding Trump. It's like every goddamn night, the first 20 or 30 minutes of the show is about Trump's latest foolishness. And I don't say that he's right on and humorous in his application of observation, but after a while, it gets to be a little tedious. So last night, since you didn't see the whole show, normally what Colbert does, he does the monologue, then there's a break, and then after the first break, there's either a second mini monologue or what they call a desk piece, a bit that he does at the desk about something. And then there's another break, and then the first guest comes out. Well, last night, there was no second monologue or desk piece after the first break. They came out of the break, bam, straight to Stern. There were no other guests, with the exception at the end of a musical guest. And that, to me, was a refreshing change of pace, simply because it was something out of the ordinary. And one of my complaints about modern-day late-night talk shows as compared to, say, Carson or Cabot back in the day, is they hardly get going with a guest when they stop, do a break, and bring out somebody else. I personally enjoy a long-form conversation with someone who has something to say, whether it's entertaining or intellectually stimulating or otherwise compelling, okay? And I would think that if you were a smart cookie, which Stephen Colbert obviously is, that every other week, once a week, they ought to do a show like they did last night, where it's the monologue, the first break, and then one guest until near the end when they bring on the musical act. There are a lot of people in this country who are compelling and interesting and intelligent and have something to say, and I think he underrates his audience, and I know they do studies and surveys and all this other stuff, but I don't think the surveys capture the fact that there are a lot of people in this country who would like to hear something other than fluff or Trump. And I don't know who to send my suggestion to, Bob.
Tweet it, direct it to, well, you don't do Twitter, but yeah.
No.
Find the Late Show on Facebook and let them have it.
But, and it's not a complaint about the show, because I do enjoy Colbert. I don't like Fallon at all. And I like Kimmel from time to time if I'm in a mood, you know? And Cabot's getting too old to do a show. But, God, some of his shows that are on YouTube and Prime Video and other places, I think in his own way Cabot was even better than Carson when it came to conversation. Maybe he didn't have the staying power of 30 years that Carson had. And I believe today's the anniversary of Carson's last show. What is today, the 22nd?
Yes.
Or maybe it was the 21st. It was 21st or 2nd of May was the last Carson show in 1992 or 3. Was it? Yeah, 1992, because he started in October of 62. Had a long run, and there were a lot of people who came up against him over the years. Let me see if I can remember. Les Crane, Joey Bishop, Merv Griffin, Dick Cabot. Who else? Who am I leaving out? Arsenio came and went. Dennis Miller had a run at it for a while. Chase.
Magic Johnson.
Yeah. Jeez. And they came and they went. I think Cabot was the only one that had any degree of staying power.
Joan Rivers.
Oh, God, yeah, Joan Rivers. I didn't like her when she flew
in. Mike Douglas.
Well, he was syndicated mostly afternoons and late afternoons.
Yeah, but it's still talk show.
But, and there was a time in the 90s, we were talking about this recently, where daytime talk, it was like everybody and his ugly brother or sister had a talk show on TV. Roseanne had one. There was a guy named Charles Perez had one. Jenny Jones, Sally Jesse Raphael. Oprah, of course. Donahue, of course. Talk.
Yeah, and you left out one of my favorites, the late great Tom Snyder.
Snyder was another one who I loved. Just loved Snyder to death. And after he retired, it was right after Carson died, in I think 2007 or so. I went to Tom's website and found the contact link and sent him an email. And I said, you know, Tom, I go back with you to the Tomorrow Show. I was a huge fan of that show. And then later, the Late Late Show on CBS. And I said, it's at times like these when a major person that you admire and respect and have enjoyed departs that you wish you had the opportunity to say, to say that to them, to let them know what their work meant to you. And I said, that's why I'm writing this email, just to let you know that I have always admired your work and your aces with me. And I got an email back from him, and he just thanked me for taking the time to do that, because I don't think we do thank yous as much as we ought to in today's world.
Yeah, I do that.
You know? And thank you, by the way.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
And don't die anytime soon, because I don't think
don't
I
jinx me.
It. No, I know. I won't say McCoy, I almost said it. I won't say the Scottish play either. But you're the only damn oasis of sanity that there is during this time of day. For me and, I don't know, countless others.
Dozens.
I don't mean to get all heavy and stuff. Well, you've got more than dozens. Come on. And I wish a lot of the old-timers would come back. The angry Indian and Jim in Louisiana. And
can't be helped. People go and do their own things.
I know that they do, Bob, but I miss some of the old-timers. Those were the people that were on when I first started listening. And, you know, it's I like variety, as you can tell. Hell, any guy that'll hang around Nazis late at night and bring them hamburgers. I like interesting folks, no matter how crazy they are. Not to say you're crazy, Bob.
No, I'm nuts.
Are you knucking futs?
Just ask around.
Ooh. Well, you're my kind of people, Bob. You're the people I like. But anyway, I don't know. This conversation seems absolutely pointless now after rambling all this way.
Well, you know, but we took care of some Nazis, and not took care of, but you know, we plumbed the depths of their evil, and I appreciate the help in that regard, because I was reading a thread on, and it's not just a thread, but you can go over and find access to it at Daily Coast. You know, our buddy David Nywert is working for them now, and he posted a brilliant takedown of Glenn Greenwald, who very few people know, and it's seldom you see a tweet thread this long. David Nywert put out something, it's like 110 tweets.
Oh, God.
In Siri. Not S-I-R-I, S-I-S-E-R-I-E.
Yeah.
He put out 110 tweets explaining Glenn Greenwald's origins as a defender of white supremacists.
Well, I kind of lost track of him. Is that his shtick now?
No. That's how he got his start.
Oh.
And along the way said some really, really hateful, awful things. But what David Nywert posted was, and for anybody who wants to find the thread, it's on my timeline. I retweeted it.
Okay, I'll look
over
for it.
Over on Twitter. It's not on Facebook. But what he did was like Luther's theses tacked to the church house door.
Yeah.
And it was kind of all you ever really needed to know. And when you look at that stuff from his early years, and not to take away any of the good work that he did, but he's kind of fallen, you know, he's one of these people that says, oh, Russia didn't do anything. And he's always there for the most part to defend indefensible dirtbags.
Well, I only knew him from, who was the guy that went to Russia?
Snowden.
Snowden.
Yeah.
I only knew him from his...
Well, he rode Snowden's back. He rode Chelsea Manning's back.
Did he work for, like, the Times or the Post or...
No. He was at Salon for a while, and then he, I think, with the Guardian. But Chelsea Manning's another sad case. Apparently, she's getting horrible legal advice. She was called to testify before a grand jury.
This was recently.
Yeah, and her ass is sitting in jail right now.
Yeah, because she didn't go.
Because she refused to testify before a grand jury.
What are they impounded to? There's
real. Well, I mean, a grand jury is a grand jury is a grand jury. And you defy a grand jury at your peril.
But don't they have a focus to what they're looking at, or, I mean, what was her rationale for not going?
Didn't want to participate.
Yeah, but I mean, what was the grand jury doing? What was the purpose of the jury being? What was the function that they were fulfilling? I mean, it's like the Watergate grand jury. There were several actually over the years, but that was their primary focus. What was the primary focus of the one that she didn't show up for?
It probably has something to do with Russian hacking, okay. With WikiLeaks.
Yeah. Okay. See, I didn't know. I was curious to know. Maybe there was a reason, that she didn't want to go because of the subject matter.
So,
well, hell,
so she was subpoenaed, refused to participate, was jailed. The grand jury term expired. She gets another grand jury subpoena and told the federal judge she wouldn't answer questions. So he sent her back to jail because that's the nature of contempt.
Yeah.
In the law of contempt in this country, you hold the contemnor holds the keys to her own cell.
Yeah.
And what's more, she's been given immunity from prosecution for her testimony. But even with that immunity, she says that she won't. Because she says she's already answered all the questions that the prosecutors would possibly need to ask. And, among other things, said, as a general principle, I object to grand juries. Prosecutors run grand juries behind closed doors and in secret without a judge present. Therefore, I decline to answer any questions. This is simply stupid.
Did someone suggest that she do that? I mean, that's not very smart.
She's getting terrible advice. And basically what is WikiLeaks, so therefore it's Julian Assange. So she's going to pogo stick up onto the cross for that weird fuck. And I'm sorry, I just, I have no... Way back when I saw an interview with Assange where he said, well, I'm basically a conservative libertarian, so I would probably more easily identify with the Republicans in the United States. And there were progressives going, ooh, we love Julian. And I'm like, suckers!
Yeah. Well, I didn't... when that whole WikiLeaks stuff was going on early on, before Trump was anything more than the Apprentice host, I didn't put a lot of stock in Assange, simply because... there was a creepy factor to him that I picked up on that made me wonder just what he was up to. That, yeah, maybe he can do some positive stuff, but with it comes a lot of stuff that you don't want. And you've got to be, I don't know what the word is, maybe pragmatic when you're deciding whose horn to blow and who to hook your wagon to. And I was just too creeped out by the guy because, any positive stuff that WikiLeaks was responsible for, and there are arguments that maybe ultimately what they were up to was not a positive thing in the long run. That's yet to be decided, I guess, by history or whatever. But I just didn't, I wasn't on his bandwagon, is what I'm saying. Even like Snowden, I mean, I get what his intent was, and some of the things that were disclosed were horrible and were very much worth knowing. But, you know, what else came with it, you know? Maybe I'm too picky that way, but...
Well, look, I don't think she should ever have been prosecuted and stuffed in prison for 35 years. It was wrong. And there's a lot to object to about the way that the Uniform Code of Military Justice is structured.
Yeah.
But when you sign on the dotted line and stick your hand in the air, as a member of the United States military, you give up a shit ton of rights.
Yeah, and that...
And
that...
in basic training, they give you about 15 minutes, probably while you're starving to death, and say, by the way, you don't ever have to obey an illegal order. And by the way, if it's found to be legal, we're going to punish the fuck out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the difference between Chelsea Manning and Snowden is that Snowden was never a member of the military. He was just a contractor.
Yeah.
Whereas Chelsea Manning had the great weight of the Uniform Code of Military Justice dropped on her like a wet sack of cement. And certain people like Julian Assange and Glenn Greenwald were more than happy to ride her back.
Yeah.
Yeah, Irish Dave has a good point. The UCMJ is to justice what military bands are to music. That's good. That's worth a jingle. Yeah.
Yeah, I concur. But the
thing is, when somebody hasn't explained to her how grand juries work, or hasn't done a very good job of it. Yes, the old saying is out there that any decent prosecutor can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. But that's not because it's a bad system. That's because the purpose of a grand jury is merely to investigate the possible commission of a crime and make a determination as to whether it is A, more likely than not, that a crime has been committed. No one is passing ultimate judgment in a grand jury. And B, whether or not the person being considered is more likely than not to have committed the crime that was more likely than not committed. There is no assignation of guilt whatsoever. So when she says she doesn't care for the grand jury because it's done in secret, fuck, what is she? Does she want a circus tent?
Well, and then there's also the thing that, I mean, she's free to defy the order, but
and
she's
the court
also
is
free
to put her in jail for it.
Well, she's also free to go in there and say that she doesn't recall or she's not sure.
Right, but there's better money.
How many times did Trump say that, but there's better money
in a hustle like this.
Or there's, I don't know how fancy the prison commissary is where she's currently stuck. But I don't care how much money's in there. There's a limited supply of things that you can buy in a little store like that, I'm guessing. And unless she's playing the long game, looking for what's next.
Yeah, I mean, she's not going to be in there. You know, this grand jury term will come to an end, too. And she'll be back out for another week, and then they'll impanel another grand jury, and back in she goes.
Well...
And
see, this is where Mark Twain's.
I mean, there are people in prison right now who decidedly don't deserve to be there.
Reality
Winter comes to mind. She told us what was being done to the election system. She blew the whistle, and she's being been stuffed in prison for God only knows how long for trying to warn the country of what the hell was being done to it. Like I said, she comes to mind.
Yeah.
Is Don Siegelman still in prison?
I think so. Last I checked.
Yeah, there's a guy who doesn't need to be in prison. And there's a world of difference between imprisoning yourself because you don't understand the goddamn process and somebody's done a horrible job of explaining it to you and may very well have their own agenda for wanting you in there and having been unjustly convicted.
Well, and there's another thing. I mean, bad legal advice to Chelsea notwithstanding. There's also the thing, and I found it out, and maybe you did too, that the your concept of the world in your early 20s turns out to be somewhat different than your concept of the world in your 30s or 40s or 50s, or God help me, as you approach in 2 or 3 weeks' time, age 65. I mean, you remained essentially the same you that you've always been, but your take on stuff can shift somewhat. And right now, she's got to be, what, 24, 25, somewhere in there, thereabouts? If I live long enough to ask her about it in 30 or 40 years, I'll bet that what I'm saying is true. Her take on the nature of things and choices is going to be different 20, 30, 40 years from now than it is now, if she's like most people. Do you get what I'm saying?
It's sure. Like,
live and learn, as the old saying goes. And, I mean, I constantly am astounded at some of the crazy shit that I used to believe. The religious stuff is big in that pile of evidence. I used to take it hook, line, and sinker, a lot of that shit, in my Jesus freak days and stuff like that. But thankfully, I grew out of it. Other information was presented to me that made way more sense, you know? So, and who knows? I may live to be 89, like the poem reader said when I was a kid. And I may have changes yet ahead of me that I'm not aware of in my mindset and the way I observe things and what I make them all mean. Because we are, after all, human beings are meaning-making machines. That's what we're hardwired to do. Everything means something. It has some significance that we bring to it.
Yeah, that, I mean, that goes all the way back to the essence of humanity and the first person who figured out, don't pick up the snake that's making the rattling noise.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you step back and get down to the basic fundamentals, and maybe I'm being redundant there, but when you get down to the fundamentals of the essence of life and aliveness, life is empty and meaningless, and it's empty and meaningless that it's empty and meaningless. Now, I know that's a Zen thing, but there's a lot of fun to be had when you play in that playground a while and get real serious about it. You can have some mind-bending moments when you play in that empty and meaningless playground. And this isn't to diminish the importance of human behavior or human events. You know, I am a big advocate for being interested in human behavior and human events. I'm less of a big fan of getting hung up on stuff that, when you boil it down to its essence, it just is. Ultimately, what is and what ain't. And if you don't like the current what is, accept it, embrace it, love on it a little bit. It frees you up to move on to whatever's next. And I don't mean to get all cosmic and shit, but that is what I have found actually has worked for me in a way that it would take me hours to fully describe. I don't, and I know that you can't always tell it from our conversations when I get all you know, frothy and we're all screwed and rage and rant about Trump and all the other idiots in the world, you know. But in my essence, it's just all the current what is, and there's not a goddamn thing I can do about it other than accept it and allow it, because it's going to be whether I allow it or not. But embrace it, accept it, love on it a little bit. A space opens up to create a new what is. Try it and see if I'm not correct. And I have no stake in being correct. I just, for the pure fun of it, I invite people to try this. Play in the playground of empty and meaningless, and it will kick you up a couple of notches in your experience factor. You know, because that's the other thing, and we've talked about this a long time ago. There's the realm of experience, and there's the realm of interpretation. And experience is what's going down on the football field. Interpretation is what the people up in the stands and the press box are up to. And there's a big difference between the experience of being in the football game and the interpretation up in the stands, or the cheerleaders saying rah-rah or boo-hiss, or the press guy or the color guy up in the press box giving the play-by-play.
Oh, it's war in the trenches.
But and
Keith,
I'm sure
these are some of the finest young athletes I have ever seen.
I'm sure some of what I'm saying will resonate with some of the Warren family.
I have no doubt.
Because they've probably found this out themselves and just didn't know quite what to make of it or how to put it in describing it to somebody. But, I should get more grounded than I sometimes am. But it's fun not to be grounded and centered and calm and zen-like, you know? We thrive on excitement.
Oh, well, we've got two corrections.
Agitation.
We've got two corrections. Dave in Tallahassee, Indiana wants us to know that Chelsea is 31.
Oh,
and Ron and Raleigh, the closest thing to good news on that front, Don Siegelman got out of prison in 2017 and is on, really, probation.
How did I miss that?
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Well, that's good in a way. I mean, at least he's out of the can.
Yep. Well, I'm going to wrap it up here. Scott, you have yourself a good evening. I enjoyed the call, of course. And
I will.
We're gonna. I've got one more story to add into the mix.
Okay.
And then we'll wrap it up. And Thorn in the Side Thursday will be on us before we know what happened.
Well, as always, Bob, it is a multitude of pleasures to visit with you and the rest of the Warren family. I consider it an honor and a privilege to do it. Even if I do it too
well,
much.
Well, conversation is the heart and soul of this program, and you bring a lot of heart and a lot of soul. Scott, have yourself a good evening, and hey, lay off the freeze dried tonight.
Okay, I will, Bob. Take care.
All right, see ya. One more story on the way out the door for this prayer meeting Wednesday. We need to go to Mississippistan for it. Mississippi is dominated by Republicans. So let's understand, the dateline on the story is Lucedale, Lucedale, Mississippi, via the Associated Press. Lucedale is in southern Mississippi. And just to use... Okay, here's the first sentence. A police report says a South Mississippi lawmaker punched his wife in the face after she didn't undress quickly enough when the lawmaker wanted to have sex. Now, a South Mississippi lawmaker who is a Republican is going to be white. And a South Mississippi lawmaker who is a Republican and white is going to be, by definition, a Christian.
So let's check in on Republican Christian Doug McLeod of the state legislature of Loosedale, who got taken in on Saturday evening this past on a misdemeanor domestic violence charge, having bloodied his wife's nose. Upon arrival at the residence, deputies noted that Representing Brother McLeod was, and this is a complicated legal term, drunk and in possession of a glass of alcohol. I prefer to think of him holding a mint julep, but you're free to work it out for yourself. And when they looked at him and said, Representing McLeod, we've had a domestic assault report, he looked and said, are you kidding me? He's on bail. Out on bail because, you know, you just let him sign his name and walk. It's not like he's some poor person that you have to put $1,000 bail on that'll keep him in prison till trial. No, heck no. He's 58 years old, represents George and Stone counties of Mississippi, and has been there since 2012. And he's up for re-election this year, and wait for it, he's unopposed. This Mississippi stand. And if you go and look for the voting record, you will find that every time this guy has had an opportunity to vote against women's ability to control the workings of their own bodies, he has voted against it and in favor of little wads of tissue smaller than a grain of goddamn rice. So it's that is where the pro-life movement comes from. And this is a guy who practices a religion that says that women are to submit to their husbands as the church submits to Christ, or Christ will bloody the church's nose. Oh, wait, I added that part. This is how you get to laws like those considered and passed by Mississippi, by Alabama, by Georgia, by Ohio. James in Illinois says, Mrs. McLeod, I think she should get off with time served. That's the also creepy part of this. I'll give you 10-1. She will eventually go crying to the Justice of the Peace or the Court of Common Pleas or the Magistrate or whatever they have in Mississippi and say, well, he's promised me he won't never do it again, and my pastor told me that I need to forgive him and ask myself what I did to make him punch me in the nose and bloody me up. Yep. Yeah. And so the last word goes to Lady B. Great show tonight. Your show is about the closest thing to church I get nowadays. It's always good to know I'm not the only one who questions crazy religious shit. Anyway, I tried to get in the mind of a hardcore Trump supporter. In their mind, the investigations and convictions of Trump campaign advisors is just the Dems' way of punishing him for Hillary Clinton not winning. They're so convinced it's just about revenge, they can't see it any other way. Their faith, their identity, and the very meaning of existence hinges on this clown having been the right choice. That belief is hard to shake. We can't stop it. But maybe we can yet again marginalize them enough to push the inevitable destruction of our fair country down the road a bit further. That being said, I'm having a feeling that it's all about to go down for real. Trump's tax returns are in the right hands, where they've always been, and they're about ready to drop the hammer. If anything talks, Bob, it's money. A man can be lied to about his hairline and his penis size, but if you short him a dollar, you can best believe that's a scalping. Our very identity in America is capitalism, and cheaters can only get away with so much. Trump is a con artist. He's broke, Well, maybe not as much now, but he literally sold his soul to get to this point. He'll gladly, and let me add editorially, again, we've spent more money, three times as much money, sending Trump to play golf as the Mueller investigation cost. That's bad enough, but in terms of him making money, remember, when he plays golf at one of his own golf clubs, his entire security detail has to pay for the privilege of guarding his adipose ass. So if we've spent $120 million sending him to play golf, a whole lot of that money has gone into his pockets. But Lady B says he will gladly burn this country down if Putin or his creditors hand him a match. And he's going to if our government keeps this up. I think important people know this. And they realize it's time to act both as judiciously and as swiftly as possible. I know there are people far more involved in this mess than him. We'll never truly know just how deep this all goes, at least not during our lifetime. But this is a big fucking deal. So money it is. That's what'll bring him down. Editorially, it's what brought down Al Capone. And that is what the Dems desperately need to hammer home if and when impeachment hearings begin. The best way to show how much of a con artist Trump is to show the world just how broke he is. The original flim-flam man has spent the last 25 years talking people out of their money. This time he fucked with a trillionaire, the United States of America. Far more worthy people have gone down for less. And then there's Bernie Madoff, who also got in deep shit for fucking with people who had more money and power than he. You can see how it works out. So maybe it's all coming to a head now, Bob. Signs look like information about his money will be coming out soon. That'll help turn the tide. He'll walk away, of course, maybe to Russia to never be seen again. I figure him for a Brazil guy myself, but you know, warm weather and all. He'll walk away, but it'll be enough to have most Americans rattled. We can't be that complacent. We have to make sure we don't get this close to ruin again. I know I usually pop off with a lot of doom and gloom about the fate of America. Getting smug satisfaction from thinking you're right in this case benefits no one. No one deserves this fate, but I'm glad reasonable folks like you exist to tell me to calm the fuck down and let the grown-ups handle this. I hope you're right. I hope I'm right. It's one of the few cases I hope I'm right. I spend a lot of time predicting shit that I hope I'm wrong about, and all too often I'm not. I hope Nancy and Chuck et al. Are truly playing the long game and not just a bunch of clueless Pollyannas. So I'll just wait and see like the rest of us. I think it's time now. It's got to be, but I still don't want more of the same. No more meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I won't get fooled again. The long game. Too bad we had to fuck with the structural integrity of our democracy, but at the end of the day, they'll resolve it just enough to continue on. You were right. That's the beauty of democracy. It's because of that that I really wouldn't want it any other way. Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Cowbell for the following. Stay golden, pony boy. Pence will do his penance in hell soon. Well, you know, for anybody headed for hell, it's always soon, no matter how long it is. Thank you, Lady B. I really, really enjoy your commentaries. And I'm going to feel really stupid if it turns out that it's another episode of look forward and not back. Because the truth of the matter is, letting the Bush thugs get away with what they got away with is a sizable chunk of how we got here. So let's see. Let's just see. And meantime, who knows? Maybe the 23rd of May, 2019, is the day he completely loses it and tears off his clothes in front of rolling cameras for all to see and starts hooting like a barn owl on acid. It could be May the 23rd. It could be May the 24th. It could be June the 1st. But there's just something about the pressure that's ratcheting up notch by notch that feels like whatever the date, it's going to be. So that's the program. We will close the evening, and thanks to everybody who brought the number down. Thanks to Kat and Glenn, and thanks to Samson. We're down to 270 to finish the evening, so we'll start tomorrow at 470 unless it comes down via the overnight crew. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going, subscribers, people who contribute ad hoc. It's the only way this does keep going. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 long years, leading the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.